Welcome to Shooter's Corner, your program for conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
All right, welcome, listeners. You're here on June 4th, 2026, in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska. We're at the KFAR studios here down on, well, in downtown. Doesn't matter. Hey, feel free. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints, feel free to call in at 458-TALK. That's 458-8255. And if you're out of state, remember to add that 907 area code. Also, remember, you can always listen to us live over at kfarradio.com. Click on that big orange ball that says listen live. And then also, there's a couple apps that are out there. The Apple Store has one, and the Android does as well, to where you can live stream basically KFAR all the time, anywhere, even on your Starlink in the middle of nowhere. Did that just rhyme?
I think accidentally, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That's perfect.
Like a poet and don't even know it.
You know, this is what happens when I don't see you with your communist Celsius water.
Nope. Today I have the All-American Monster.
Oh, my goodness.
In peach flavor. Zero sugar, but I supplemented that with a Snickers bar.
That's perfect. It's an even balance. You know, you don't want too much, but, you know, you are not you when you're hungry.
Well, two of the three major food groups.
Yeah.
This is not an advert for Snickers. But that's not conducive to driving here.
Oh, boy. All right. Starting out great.
Yeah. So what do you got there? Just a coffee? It's not some latte thing.
No, this is actually water.
And why would you do that when you know you're going to be on the radio show with such a small bladder?
I will rue those consequences when the time comes.
Just recirculate.
Yeah, it'll
stay hydrated.
I'll absorb it back.
Recirculate, hydrate.
Yep, exactly.
Just like in the military, Thomas. All right. So, anyways, wow, that went down some really deep rabbit holes.
Welcome.
You got Chuck and Matt show here. Anyways, it is 65 degrees here and sunny, and that's a good thing.
It feels great.
And you know why? Because it's sunny during weekdays when everybody's at work, and then it rains on weekends when everybody's off.
Exactly.
Except for me, because I'm retired. And I can do everything on the weekdays now. I'm always off.
Look at that. How nice is that?
I know.
How free do you feel? The shackles have been unchained.
I know. Bogged down by corporate and military and everybody else for the last 43 years. And it was strange being able to go out of state and not have to let somebody know where I was.
And for the listeners, I want you to understand how some people may not understand this. Chuck, for two-thirds of his life, has had to tell someone where he's going, when he's going there, have it approved, all of this stuff. Now he is a free man.
And it's weird. I got to tell you, it's just kind of weird.
It's hard to break that habit of like, oh, I shouldn't.
Should I let somebody know that I'm in like Tennessee or something?
Who do I tell? Well, and it's like, who's your emergency contact? Well, my wife, and she's with me.
Right. Yeah. Other than that, don't care.
Yep. Nope.
And now it's like, I see something and it's like, not my clowns, not my circus anymore.
Well, yeah. Good. Just
does it affect me personally? Is it endangering life? No. Well, that's somebody else's issue now. Not me. Let's start the show. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Not will or maybe or whatever. I think they were pretty clear when they said that shall.
When we feel like it.
Yeah. We got, midterms coming up?
I think so.
I think this is going to be incredibly important. So, anyways, the Alaska Outdoor Mentorship Program is going to be on June 11th over at TVSA Range from 5:30 to 7 on the 11th. I already say that. And it is going to be talking about the 40-mile caribou herd. Why they call it 40 mile? Maybe somebody could call in and let me know. Is that 40 miles up the Stees, 40 miles up the what?
I don't know.
Are they like traveling only 40 miles? Do they like, hey, let's only migrate, but we're only going to go 40 miles?
My brain's going in one direction, and that's 8 mile from M&M, but I know that's not correct. So I don't know. But if we show up, we'll actually learn.
I was listening to Tuesday's Gone by Lynyrd Skynyrd on the way here.
Oh, really?
Classic. Yeah. Now that we have that off our chest. Also, remember public shooting hours over at TVSA Range every Thursday from 6 to 8. And nobody's told me if that's changed, so we will run with that. Also, remember, C4 Training Group is hosting Active Self-Protection Skills Summit in Fairbanks on June 20th and 21st. I get it. That is summer solstice, but that's awesome because that means the sun's up. Oh, we got a call. What do you want to bet? It's about the 40-mile caribou herd.
It's either that or the Berna.
Move it.
Let's see.
And action. You're on, listener.
I think it's 40 miles. downriver from Dawson.
From Dawson.
40 miles downriver
from Dawson.
You come from Dawson. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate that. All right. There we have our answer.
Perfect.
So it wasn't that they'd only travel 40 miles.
That was faster than Google.
Well, we're done. We're lazy. We're going to stop right here.
Perfect.
Maybe somebody will shoot me.
All right, turn around.
So I'd have to go back the other 40. We'd be the 80-mile herd.
Yeah, maybe someone missed out on, forgot their water or something. That's why they turned around, and it's a total of 40 miles. Who knows? I don't.
You know why? Because they don't have a camelback.
Ooh.
I just played this so many different ways that you could interpret that. Yeah. All right, anyways. Just remember, Active Self-Protection Skills Summit is going to be June 20th and 21st. This training is going to be brought to us by Neil Widener and Chris Bean. They are from Active Self-Protection. If you don't know who they are all over the YouTubes. So there's that. Let's see. An ACHP class is going to be – our next class is going to be July 18th and 19th. Remind me to get a hold of that location over there.
Oh, yeah.
Those dates are free before I post it online. Anyways.
Tentatively.
Tentatively. So we did discuss maybe a June class, but I'm like, we got to enjoy the summer.
Yeah. So. I think last year we were pretty busy during the summer too. So
we were crazy.
Because I think we had the ACHP and then the carbine class as well.
We do have the carbine class in June. Yeah. We have the July, the carbine class. And then we have the active self-protection class coming up in June 2021. So yeah. And, speaking of that, our carbine class for home defense is July 25th and 26th. Remember, it's going to be separated into two different days. So July 25th is going to be the level one. July 26th is going to be the level two. So you can either sign up for one or the other. However, we recommend that if you take the two level, that you have done at least the one level class. So you're not just a rookie. All right, moving on. I guess I could have deleted that part out there about Saturday. All right.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, we're good. All right. Let's get into this week's in firearm history. All right. June 6, 1817. You know what happens also on June 6?
What's that?
It's my birthday.
Oh, my goodness. I'm pretty sure you had four birthdays this year. Chuck, for the listeners, Chuck's making stuff up, all right? This might be his real one. Chuck's been getting gifts left and right. It's quarterly. It's quarterly Chuck birthdays.
Two most important birthdays, Jesus and mine. All right, so anywho.
Oh, my goodness.
let's see. Roland White, the gunsmith and inventor whose U.S. patent for bored through revolver cylinder changed everything was born on this date in Williamstown, Vermont. So June 6th. I share a birthday with Roland White. All right, that's cool. He was born in 1817. I'm a little bit behind him.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. So we've already talked about his story in detail and how he offered the idea to Samuel Colt, who turned it down and licensed it exclusively to Smith & Wesson and sparked the years of the patent wars as competitors tried to work around or infringe on it. I guess that's probably what they did more than anything. His simple, brilliant concept, boring the cylinder all the way through so metallic cartridges could be loaded from the rear, bridged the percussion era and modern cartridge era. Without it, the rapid evolution of practical repeating handguns would have been delayed for years. So that's kind of a big deal. And the fact that I find it incredibly odd that Samuel Colt turned that down. Maybe what was he thinking at that time? Who knows?
I don't know. Probably huffing lead. That's how they're coming up with these great ideas. We keep talking about it. We've gotten all the cool chemicals taken out of the air, and now we get nothing.
Well, they were around firearms a lot, and all they had was lead bullets in. So
yeah, exactly.
Probably like me as a kid pinching lead sinkers with my teeth.
Yeah. The lead paint chips in your
in my Fruit Loops, or early military housing, they had asbestos. Yeah,
oh my goodness,
like all kinds of. Oh, and the chemical testing paper that you put on there, and you'd tear it with your teeth. Yeah, like everything that should be wrong with me is wrong with me.
God, better times.
Yeah, better times. So while no other major patents dropped the first week of June itself, this time of year in the mid-19th century was an active period for American inventors working on breech-loading systems. Just a couple weeks later, on June 23rd, 1857, Gilbert Smith received a U.S. patent. Maybe we should talk about that next week, but now we're going to talk about it now. For his innovative 50-caliber breech-loading carbine, the Smith carbine used a unique India rubber cartridge that expanded on firing to seal the breech. An early attempt at self-sealing metallic-style cartridge before true brass cases became common. Remember, that's what we talked about in some of our classes in the past, is that you want a softer alloy, like brass, nickel.
Not steel.
Yeah, aluminum is acceptable, but not steel.
Yep.
Because they literally, on ignition, expand to seal the chamber and prevent the gas from going backwards towards the shooter, obviously. But then they're in that dwell cycle, you know, of microseconds compressed back down. Yep. But anyways, that's also interesting. Well, maybe we'll look up more about the India Rubber Cartridge Company. But we need to go into our first break. All right. When we come back from our first break, we're going to talk about Chuck's editorial and magazine failures. So stay tuned here, 97.5, 660 AM with Chuck and Matt at Shooter's Corner. We'll be right back.
Roughly 20 veterans die by suicide every single day. Canines for Warriors has been the nation's leading nonprofit organization, providing service dogs for veterans battling PTSD and other invisible wounds of war.
Thanks to my service dog, Lady Cameo, I got my life back.
I'm able to get out of bed in the morning.
Be excited, happy about today.
To learn more, visit caninesforwarriors.org. That's caninesforwarriors.org.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound. This is Lori Prox in Valdez with a fishing update and the Valdez Halibut Derby standings for you. Nathan Kennedy of Fairbanks reeled in a 103.6-pound halibut on the first day of the Halibut Derby on May 24th aboard the Chugach Girl after a full week of fishing and many weigh-ins. His fish is still in the lead. When asked for his reaction to the size of the fish, here's what he said.
To be honest, it was just, I was more focused on just trying to get it in the boat. I didn't realize how big it was. I just knew that it was a lot of work to get it even to the side of the boat. So, and then once we got it onto the deck, kind of the fact that the fish is the same size as me was put a little bit into perspective.
Several anglers brought in fish close to 100 pounds, but Kennedy's the only one who's broken the 100-pound mark in the Valdez Halibut Derby. David Brody of Valdez reeled in a 94.4-pound halibut aboard the Chugach Girl and is currently second place overall. Jake Henry of Silex, Missouri is currently in third place with a 90.4-pound halibut he caught aboard the Hofstrom. The grand prize for catching the largest fish in the Valdez Halibut Derby is $10,000 cash, second place $3,000, and third place $1,500. The weekly first and second place prizes were won by Kennedy and Brody, respectively.
Coming to Valdez? Stay at Valdez RV Park. These TripAdvisor reviews tell you all you need to know.
Each site was clearly labeled, ground was graded well, and it's so close to the harbor.
Owners are friendly and accommodating, and the laundry, shower, and bathrooms were very clean. They even had s'mores at the fire pit.
Visit ValdezRVPark.com today.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
It's that time of year again. The sun is out, roads are clear, and gravel is everywhere. At Auto Trim Design, we have you covered. With our self-healing paint protection film, keeping your paint looking showroom new and defending from rock chips and scratches, helping your car stay flawless for years. With our ceramic window tint, not only will it have a stylish look, it also provides protection from harmful UV rays, reduces glare, blocks heat, and increases privacy. From exterior protection to interior comfort, Auto Trim Design has you covered. Stop by or give us a call to get your vehicle ready for summer in Alaska.
Hi, it's Chuck Indereaton, your host for Shooter's Corner, the show dedicated to firearms conversation and education and the shooting sports. You'll be on target for fascinating guests, expert tips, gear reviews, plus thrilling stories. Get the lowdown on local 2A events and more. You won't want to miss a single episode. Join me, Chuck Indereaton, every Thursday morning at 11 for Shooter's Corner, where precision meets passion. Sponsored in part by Frontier Outfitters. Listen right here on KFAR 660 AM.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too. Family owned and operated. Keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with daytime highs approaching 71. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mainly clear tonight, lows dip down to about 47. Lots of sunshine tomorrow, highs level off around 68. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right. Welcome back, listeners. Let me get the microphone up here. All right. There we go. All right. If you thought I was talking fast last time, stand by because I had the opportunity to, swill down a part of a Snickers bar. So maybe I should...
He's going to be flying.
Slow down. Hey, do we still have a caller?
We do.
All right, put them on. Let's see what they got to say. Maybe it's about the 80-mile caribou here. All right, listener, you're here with Chuck and Matt at Shooter's Corner. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, this is Tom Fowley, and I'm here to illuminate you a little bit about the 40-mile country.
Is this the Tom from Sportsman's?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry.
Anyway, I used to fly for an outfit here in Fairbanks. One of my early flying jobs was 40 Mile Air.
Okay.
And they're originally from Tok. And that whole area as he said correctly, probably about 40 miles downstream from Dawson, the 40 Mile River comes in there. And that whole drainage area is called the 40 Mile. And that's why it's the 40 Mile Caribou Herd.
Got it. That makes sense. Okay. So it's not because they just got to 40 miles and said that they were tired and stopped.
No. It's just a bit, it's just another kind of a large area. And
fair enough.
Not a lot of population out there. You know, there's chicken and eagle, that's about it.
Not a lot to eat then, just chicken and eagles.
Yep, that's right. And, yeah, chickens are tastier.
Because I've never eaten an eagle. But, you know, the funny thing is everybody says everything tastes like chicken, though.
So what does chicken really taste like?
What is really chicken? Is it just...
Well, lynx taste.
Chicken tastes like alligator.
Anyway, yeah, lynx tastes a lot like chicken.
Lynx does?
Yeah, it's a real kind of
It's a wild cat.
Yeah.
They're huge.
So
we had a guy on here that on the radio show not too long ago who was baiting them things. I guess you can use like a CD-ROM because it's basically a cat and they're attracted to reflections and stuff like that.
Cert pistol, little lasers.
or you could use a laser on a pistol and
come here,
tease them. Hey, Tom, I appreciate the call.
Okay.
That makes sense. So that they're like 40 miles downstream on a 40-mile river and then that's the whole drainage name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a popular placer mining area. You know, the guys who go scoop stuff up out of the bottom of the rivers, dredges and stuff like to work in there.
Yeah, Cindy and I made a drive up to Chicken one time, and it was like those placer mine things were everywhere out there. So
yeah, so
that's awesome.
Okay.
Appreciate that.
Be good.
Yeah, you too. Be safe. Have a great day. All right. So funny thing, Matt and I have, Craig, one of our buddies, has also seen this crazy video that came out on the intertubes. And I was slightly entertained by this, but this was a guy probably shooting some type of competition or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was evident that his magazine plate, the bottom, just came off.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so he just basically did a mag dump. Unfortunately, it was out the bottom of his gun.
It's the less fun one.
Yeah, the less fun one. And it was a Canic.
Yeah, it was a Canic.
Not to pick on Canic per se, but just to say it was a Canic.
They've gotten better over the years, but they're still I don't personally recommend them because I know a lot of people who've had issues with them, and one of their biggest things is magazine failures, and it's evident in that video as to why.
Mm-hmm. You think he modified that, though, and just maybe did something, didn't put it back on?
Honestly, I it's a 50-50. I know Prodigy magazines, too, when they came out, those base plates were doing the same thing. They just pop off and because they weren't from the factory, weren't seated all the way on, and people just don't check. Yeah. So it's not clipped in and it falls out.
Good. So, once again, no, the magazine was not the absolutely, not the most likely cause of a malfunction in a semi-automatic handgun. And I've been to classes before where they're like, if you have a malfunction, it's probably the magazine. Well, not always the case, okay? So here's my editorial. If you ask any instructor who teaches more than a handful of students a year, they'll tell you the same thing. I'll tell you mine. The vast majority of stoppages have nothing to do with the magazine. For the armed citizen who carries concealed for self-defense, understanding what actually causes malfunctions is far more important than chasing phantom magazine problems. Here's the real list, in rough order of how I see them often on the range. Shooter-induced slide malfunction, or a stoppage. This is by far the most common culprit. The shooter's grip or support hand interferes with the slide's rearward movement. Classic examples include the support thumb riding high and blocking the slide, or a limp wrist grip that fails to provide enough resistance for the slide to cycle fully. Under stress and with poor fundamentals, this happens more than most shooters want to admit. I know with my particular grip, my support hand thumb, if it is not on the takedown lever on the Glock, it will tend to be back and interfere with a slide stop lever.
Yep.
And therefore, it won't lock to the rear on that last round. So that's something that I'm aware of, and I just make sure that I adjust accordingly. Lubrication deficiency. Okay. Dry guns go to crap reliably. If I can't immediately spot a shooter-induced issue, my first check is whether the gun has any lube on it. A light coat of quality oil or grease on the rails, barrel hood, and locking surface solves an enormous number of problems. Dirty guns often still run. Dry guns, not so much. Ask me how I know. I've seen a lot of newer shooters that get the gun directly from the store, wherever they bought it. They bring it to the range and have not even disassembled it, put any type of lube on it or anything. Like, and most guns will ship with some type of like a shipping grease.
Yeah.
Like, back in the day, it used to be like, what was that, Cosmoline? It's like a really thick industrial grease just to prevent rust and during shipping. Glock puts that, it's like a copper-based lube just on like the rails and stuff, just lightly. But it's still important to take those guns apart, clean them, and stuff like that. Now, I do have some guns that I have not cleaned in a while. I'll admit it. I have a couple Glocks that I probably got, you know, 8,000-10,000 rounds through.
Yeah.
And what do? I just have more lube.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's all good. Ammo-related stoppages. Cheap range ammo and questionable reloads are frequent offenders. Weak primers, out-of-spec rounds, or inconsistent powder charges can cause failures to fire or failures to extract. This is uncommon with quality defensive ammunition, but it happens regularly with bargain bin practice ammo. Consistency matters, right? With your self-defense ammo, don't be cheap.
Nope.
I just can't do that. Now, practice ammo, if you're shooting 115 grain or something like that, still use quality stuff. Now, I know that there is some manufacturers that came out with 115 grain metal case ammo, like in 9mm, like, if you love your gun, don't shoot that crap. Period. All right. Safety-related stoppage. Another shooter-induced issue. Most shooters can't fully depress a grip safety. I've seen that a lot with people that especially have arthritis in their hands. Yep. And they have, you know, Smith & Wesson EZ came out. And they were like, oh, this is all the rage. No, like John Browning made that up like in 1911. Like,
yeah.
That is the same grip safety that's on a 1911. But what I have found is if they don't grip that gun properly. And what I mean by properly is that front to back pressure. They're not depressing the grip safety and then the gun doesn't fire. And they're like, my gun doesn't work. No, let's work on your grip first.
Yes.
The gun is functioning the way it was designed to function. But we just need to modify your grip a little bit. We'll fix that. So others ride the manual safety on the 1911 or apply pressure to the trigger while trying to disengage it, causing a jam. Now, what I've seen, though, is a lot of people will have a 1911-style handgun and have not been trained on it. They will grip it in the same manner that they did, like, their Glock or other non-safety gun, and their thumb is riding underneath the safety.
Yep.
The problem with that is on recoil, you will force your safety back into position, and then the gun won't fire.
Yeah.
And you'll think it's a fail to fire. And then you just default back to tap, roll, rack, right? And that doesn't work. Because you can't rack a 1911 with the safety on.
Nope.
So
then you're sitting there cursing at your gun.
So if you're shooting if you're shooting a 1911, just make sure your thumb rides on top of the safety during engagements. So shooters with smaller hands sometimes struggle to fully disengage the trigger shoe safety. So on the front of Glocks, some Smith & Wessons, stuff like that, they have that little tiny tab that's on the front of the trigger. Their little tiny Vienna sausage fingers might not be able to fully engage that safety as well. So All of these are just training and familiarity issues, not equipment failures. So I think that's important to note as well. We're probably going to get forced into our first break.
Yeah, we got about 30 seconds.
About 30 seconds. I'll tell you what, let's hold off on that because I really want to get into the magazine-related stoppages and other stuff too. But just to leave you with some quick recap, remember a lot of these are shooter-induced or lubrication issues, ammo-related issues. Oh, yeah, because we had that one guy who came to a class with a Rock River 10 mil, shooted truncated cone, and it wouldn't slide up into the feed ramp. Once we put round nose on there, it fed perfect every time.
Yep.
All right. We're going to come right back after this break with Chuck and Matt here at Shooter's Corner. Stay tuned here at 97.5, 660 AM.
The Tanana Herb Company, relieving stress in Fairbanks since 2016. Proud sponsor of KFAR.
Fox News, I'm John Zossier. The Trump administration trying to crack down on public sector fraud in Ohio. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Administrator Dr. Mehmet Oz announcing the state's taking action to prevent any further health care fraud.
They are suspending 49 home health care providers who have been identified as high risk to the Medicaid program. These people have billed millions of dollars to take advantage of our most vulnerable.
New York City and state leaders getting ready for the World Cup soccer tournament. The Big Apple's anticipating an influx of travelers from all over the world. Mayor Zoran Mamdani urging commuters to avoid driving into Manhattan, instead use public transit.
I do want to encourage New Yorkers traveling into Midtown to park their cars at home, take a bike, ride the subway, or walk. Public transit will be running and able to get you where you need to go.
The first World Cup match hosted in the New York City area will be between Brazil and Morocco on June 13th. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KTOO reports 12 people were infected by an outbreak of gastrointestinal illness while aboard a small cruise ship traveling through Southeast Alaska last week. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which released a report of the outbreak aboard the National Geographic Seabird on Monday. The ship began its six-day voyage in Juneau last Tuesday and traveled through several towns, including Sitka and Haines. It's scheduled to return to Juneau this Friday. Of the 90 passengers and crew on board, 12 people contracted the illness. 9 were passengers and 3 were crew members. The illness reportedly caused people to experience vomiting, diarrhea, muscle ache, headaches, abdominal cramps, and fever. The type of illness is unknown at this time, according to the CDC. And finally, our big on-air auction begins Friday morning at 8 a.m. You can get details and browse the site at AlaskaRadioAuction.com. That's AlaskaRadioAuction.com.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts? We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service, too. Family-owned and operated. Keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
Hi, it's Chuck Indereed, and your host for Shooter's Corner, the show dedicated to firearms conversation and education and the shooting sports. You'll be on target for fascinating guests, expert tips, gear reviews, plus thrilling stories. Get the lowdown on local 2A events and more. You won't want to miss a single episode. Join me, Chuck Indereed, every Thursday morning at 11 for Shooter's Corner, where precision meets passion. Sponsored in part by Frontier Outfitters. Listen right here on KFAR 660 AM.
Hey Fairbanks, Bryant from Auto Trim Design. Now's the perfect time to get your work trucks set up right. From toppers, back racks, beacons, running board seat covers, floor liners, bed slides, ladder racks, and so much more. Auto Trim Design has everything you need to tackle any job. Our commercial toppers keep your equipment and tools secure and out of the elements. Need to keep your bed organized? Add a deck drawer system to easily access all your gear. Contact Auto Trim Design for your professional truck grade accessories today.
Customized by Auto Trim Design.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck and Matt at Shooter's Corner here in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska. We're at the KFAR studio. Remember, if you have any questions, feel free to call in 907-458-TALK. All right, we'll continue on here. So we just got done talking about some of the firearms malfunctions, mostly being shooter-induced, lubrication issues, ammo-related, safety-related, and meaning the manual safeties on the guns themselves, not you. But now let's talk about magazine-related stoppages. So this one sits way down on the list in modern handguns with modern magazine designs. Yep. Occasionally, feed lip deformation from dropping magazines on concrete, like 1911 magazines can happen, and other steel-type magazines, obviously. That can happen, but it's rare for the most part. They tend to, I've always noticed, unless you throw them intentionally, like they tend to land on the base plates.
Yeah.
So
even that secondary bounce, they'll take a beating for a little bit, but it is annoying having to recalibrate my magazines, especially for my competition guns. That's just, it's too much time. It's wasting.
Mm. If your gun is malfunctioning with multiple different magazines, the odds are that the magazine is, odds that the magazine is the problem is zero. So probably with the gun itself. What was some other, that was mostly with the carbines that we had issues with the followers and stuff like that in the early GI magazines.
Yeah.
So, broken internal parts. So guns do break, springs weaken, extractors chip, firing pins fail. These are legitimate mechanical issues, but they're less common than the four above cases. So where did this, it's always the magazine myth come from? I'm convinced it traces back to military experience. Decades ago, troops carried old U.S. GI M16 magazines with worn tilt followers, tired wire springs, and questionable maintenance. I remember when that gun was originally issued to the military back in the Vietnam era, they were told that this was a maintenance-free gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, were they wrong.
Boy, were they wrong. That was just some general that got schmoozed.
Yep.
The same thing happened with aging service pistols and ancient magazines whose springs had lost tension. In those environments, when a lubed gun failed to feed, the magazine was often the culprit. That's why so many guys headed to the global war on terror brought their own P-Mags. They'd seen what worn GI mags could do. And that's pretty true. I know a lot of guys who were buying their own mags.
Yeah, that's the first thing I did. I was told when I first got in is buy your own magazines because ours suck. And I was like, nah, there's no way. I got issued them and they all had the old, I think, blue followers, and you get halfway through your magazine and the follower itself would just be tilted and get stuck, and then you just have horrible, but they, I mean, these things were old, like probably manufactured in the 90s and handed out then, so they had never, springs had never been switched out, all of them might open up and there'd be like an eighth of a millimeter of carbon buildup on the entire thing. Like they were just disgusting, but they were always an issue. So yeah, I went out and bought the Gen 1 P-Mags, and that was, it worked well.
And I think that's a bigger thing, too, when they started shooting suppressed.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When the Army started issuing, or some units had suppressors as well, a lot of that gas is dumped right down into the magazine well on the M16. So that creates more issues in and of itself.
Yep. Like,
contrary to popular belief, carbon is not lubrication.
No.
Although you can throw more oil on it and it makes a nice paste.
Yeah.
But then the sand attracts to it. There's all kinds of issues that are with that whole side of the world over there with, you know, sand. So
God, I hate sand.
Me too. So that context does not apply to modern armed citizen carrying a quality defensive handgun with modern magazines. Here's what actually matters the most to us who carry concealed. Lube your gun. Even a dirty gun runs better when it's properly lubricated. Make it a habit. Feed it decent ammo. Skip the cheapest range fodder and never trust their good components, reloads, from the gun show. Your life may depend on it. I always tell our students, too, do not shoot reloads as a self-defense ammo.
Nope.
I think that's kind of an industry-wide, like, mantra, if you will. Mossad talks about it as well. And I think the biggest reason why is because there's really no exemplar round for that.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have a round that you've tested and able to, with empirical data, prove to a you know, off-the-chain prosecutor or some other civil case that you weren't trying to create some zombie killer or something like that, or loaded a, you know, to a plus, 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 P plus, you know, round to try to make it kill more efficiently or something. But if you stick with the same type of ammo that's issued to your local law enforcement, then you're probably pretty good. That's just the word of thought. Let's see. Grip the gun like you're in charge. Strong, consistent grip. Drive the gun. Don't let the gun drive you. That actually goes back into, because that grip, a strong grip, is going to help deactivate those safeties, especially if one that has a grip safety on it. But just also remember that grip extends through the wrist. So, interestingly enough, I was watching a Jeff Cooper video. You could tell it was from like the 70s and stuff like that. Probably like recorded on a Betamax or something. But one of the things he was always talking about, and he didn't say grip extends through the wrist. He just said, make sure your grip and your elbows are locked. Well, that's kind of the same concept, because you don't want to have like a really strong grip on the gun and then a weak wrist where the gun's just bouncing around like, you know, like they do on some Dirty Harry movie, like, like showing the recoil or something of their 44 Magnum. But yeah, just remember, you got to make sure you drive that gun. Don't let it drive you. Especially with female shooters, I've seen where they get kicked back on their heels, right? So, you know, act like you're about ready to punch somebody in the face and lean into it. Separate your training magazines from your carry magazines. Buy enough magazines that you're not dropping, kicking, or abusing your carry mags during drills. Save those for defensive use. I also mark all of mine.
Yep.
So that I know that if number one mag, you know, or the number three mag, well, number three mag is giving me problems. All right, but let's rotate that one out.
Yep.
It's about the cost of an expensive lunch now. Well, about any lunch now.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you look at, Glock mags went up in price for some reason, but like,
well, even, demand.
Yeah.
Because you got Virginia and all these other places that are starting to ban high capacity or standard capacity magazines.
Yeah, sorry,
Let me rephrase that.
Correctly rephrase. Yeah.
Yeah, correctly rephrase that. And they're starting to ban all of them. So there is a rush on them.
Yeah.
Like,
I started to make, I used to do it a lot. I can't remember who had talked to me about it, but I used to do it years ago and I've started to do it again, where anytime I go into Sportsman's, Alaska Ammo, anywhere that sells anything's firearms related, I'll always pick up
Frontier Outfitters.
Yeah, Frontier Outfitters. I'll always pick up one mag for every weapon I have, or at least try to. I'm already going to go in there and spend $200-$300.
So you're making a house payment there.
Pretty much, yeah. But
if I did that for every gun,
you definitely have. I can't do it for anything AICS because they're $100 each. But like, you know, Glock mags or AR mags, just pick up one. You're already going in to spend anywhere from $50 to $500 to $1,000, like the extra $30 to ensure you have magazines across the board and you're not relying on one broken one you hope is going to work is not, it's not worth it.
You know, there's only one place, you know, you just kind of gave me this epiphany. I think there's only one place that I wish it would sell.
What? That'd be cool.
Costco.
Ooh, yeah.
Because every time I go in there anyways, I add like two or three zeros to it. Like, I'm going to go pick up a chicken. And then I come out with like $300 worth of crap.
Yeah, you can't go. There's something
about Costco.
Yeah.
That just sucks you.
It's got to be a CIA like psyop where you walk in through the moment you scan your ID, they like hit you with an IR light to buy more. I don't know, but I'll go in there with a full list. I'll price it out $150 and I'm spending $500 every time. I don't know what happens.
Could you imagine if they sold magazines there?
Can you imagine?
Or ammo? Bulk ammo.
You can buy a pallet of ketchup for like $100.
Why can't I buy a pallet of 9mm there?
Exactly. I can buy gun safes.
Get on board.
Everything else. Yeah. If you're listening.
Well, the gun safes they sell are kind of crap anyway.
They are, but they still sell them.
Yeah, because people buy them.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so where do we leave off? Okay, so use OEM or high-quality magazines for carry. Cycle them 15 to 20 times with your carry ammo to confirm reliability. Then rotate the ammunition every 6 to 12 months. I tell people probably quarterly, but at least at a minimum, semi-annually.
Yeah.
Rotate that ammo. And what we mean by that is, take the ammo out of the magazines, or use the ammo in the magazines, I should say. Let me rephrase that. And just go to the range, whether it's, you know, whatever range of your choice, TVSA, Alaska Ammo, during the winter months. And then just shoot that ammo so that you know your gun still functions properly with it. Your point of aim, point of impact are still the same, especially if you're using a dot.
Yep.
Nothing's changed. And then it also refamiliarizes you with that recoil impulse,
yep,
right? Because your defensive ammo will probably have a little bit more of a kick than 115 grain round nose, you know,
white box
or something, or you know, exactly. You get the point. And besides the fact, here's what you also do not want to do: come home and unload your gun, and then take that round that just came out of the chamber and put it on the top of the magazine and continually reload that.
Right.
Do not do that.
Yeah.
like rotate the ammo within the magazine itself. Like strip that one off if you've already done it a couple times, put it in the bottom, and just continue to rotate them that way as well if you unload your gun every time you come home. And there's a lot of reasons why we do that. Probably the biggest one is that guns come into a sudden stop every time. It's going to change the overall length of the projectile within the casing. Or it could be ramming up against the rifling of itself and cause it to like compress back into the casing more, which changes the chamber pressure of it. But probably the biggest thing is you're just going to wear it down, and you don't want to do that. You could literally start breaking down also the components of the primer by it coming to a sudden stop. So, all right, we got to go into our last break for today. Yay!
Woohoo!
I know, right? And when we come back, we'll continue on our conversations here. I also want to talk about the Weaver stance as well and what Jeff Cooper had to say about that. So stay tuned with Chuck and Matt here at Shooter's Corner. We'll be right back here at 97.5, 660 AM.
Auto Trim Design has it all, from radios, speakers, amplifiers, moose lights, running boards, and step bars, to WeatherTech floor liners and mud flaps. And don't forget about the CompuStar remote starts, Arctic polyurea spray and bed liners, back racks, and ladder racks. Auto Trim Design also has Lear and ARE toppers and smart caps. All this and more at Auto Trim Design under the big American flag.
Customized by Auto Trim Design.
Going camping is the simply satisfying, relaxing way to enjoy the Alaskan outdoors. Plan to get the most out of your experience with a visit to Frontier Outfitters. Check off your list of essentials, such as tents, sleeping bags, and cookware from your favorite brands, such as Mountain Hardware, Kelty, Slumberjack, Coleman, Jetboil, and more. Garmin GPS. Protect your eyes with sunglasses by Oakley, Maui Jim, and Costa. Your successful camping trip begins at Frontier Outfitters. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with daytime highs approaching 71. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies. Tonight, lows dip down to about 47. Daytime highs approaching 68. Tomorrow, mainly sunny skies. Upper 60s Saturday, mid 60s Sunday, with thunderstorms likely. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, we're back. We got Chuck and Matt here at Shooter's Corner. We just got done talking about some of the magazines and other gun failures. I guess she says that. Stoppages. Probably shooter-induced more than anything.
Things no good.
Things. Me, gun no bang.
Yeah, caveman, gun no go.
So we already mentioned that. Make sure you lube it. Make sure you feed it with decent ammo. Grip the gun like you're in charge. Drive the gun. Don't let the gun drive you. We already talked about separating your training magazines from your carry magazines. Use high-quality magazines as well. And please, stop defaulting to it must be the magazine. That mindset distracts you from fixing the real problems, which are probably your fundamentals, maintenance, and ammunition quality. So, people who openly carry, like in offset holsters, can occasionally bang the base plate of a magazine hard enough to dislodge their pistol into a game of hungry, hungry hippos, which is what we saw in that video where all the rounds just fell at the bottom. I know Clint Smith talks about how a 1911 magazine had like snagged or something like that when he was getting out of the car, and it looked like a Pez dispenser and everything. I don't know about you, but I don't have – even my Wilson Combat 45 mags are rounded off now.
Yeah.
So they don't really snag on a lot of stuff.
Must have been old.
Right. I know the original, like, GI issue 1911 mags because I was issued in 1911 when I joined the Army in 1982. But when I got my first duty station in 1983. But nonetheless, they have advanced a little bit better. So for the average concealed carry citizen, the specific risk is vanishingly small that that type of thing is going to happen on you. So focus on what actually breaks the gun in the real world. Train with purpose. Maintain your equipment. Feed it quality ammunition and grip it correctly. Do those things consistently and you'll spend a lot less time wondering why your gun just went click when it should have gone bang. So some totally
unsolicited.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to do a shot of Monster.
Yep. It is a Monster. Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. No oh, yeah. Celsius over here.
Nope, no Canadian communist stuff here. All right. If you really want the gun to run reliably, run the best magazines available for that gun. Usually those are the factory magazines, with notable exception of 1911s, in which the case, the Wilson Combat 47D or Wilson Combat Tactical are the gold standard no matter what your gun came with. Factory mags are almost 50 buckaroos, so we get it. I think you just alluded to that, like Glock mags have gone up in price. It's a supply and demand world right now because states are trying to ban standard capacity magazines.
I think they're $32 a piece. This is the cheapest I can find around here right now.
That's about average, though.
I remember, again, just a few years ago, $14 was what I was paying for Glock mags down in the lower 48. Like, brand new in the box, off the shelf, was $14.
What did they do, fall off the back of a shipping truck or something?
I don't know, but it was every store.
Oh, wow. So we get that they're expensive compared to the Pro Mags that somebody might have on their table at a gun show for $20, right? So here's the part where you need to lean in, and I will look you right in the eye and say the uncomfortable truth. Guns are not expensive. Magazines are not expensive. Quality hearing protection and quality holster is not expensive. What's expensive is proficiency with all that gear. Paying for classes from competent people like C4, traveling to where the class is being taught, staying at an Airbnb or a hotel room near the range, buying a case of ammo because you'll shoot half of it up in class and the second half following up on any range sessions trying to retain what you've learned. A weekend's class is not in your hometown will likely cost you $1,500 to $2,000. So when a guy tells me he won't buy a factory mag so he can save the ad equivalent of lunch money, I know right there that he's not any good with his gun, and it isn't going to get good with his gun until he figures out what things really cost. So stay safe, stay sharp, keep training.
I think with that, too, there's an adage that I constantly see, whether it's online or you hear it when you hear people talking about firearms, is someone will be talking about a weapon they've invested a lot of money in. They're buying a nicer name, like rifles, Daniel Defense, BCM, whatever. Right. And then you'll hear someone
Noveski.
Else. Yeah, Noveski, which, God, those are good, but God, are they expensive. But you'll hear the other end of it, which someone's like, ah, you don't need that. My ATI, my polymer lower AR does just as fine, and it stacks holes at 10 meters. And I'd rather, get a weapon that does the same thing and spend the money on training and ammo than I would the whole weapon itself. But then they're not spending it on training and ammo. It's almost like a coping mechanism for them. Like, you are going to have to, you'll understand when you start out shooting and you're young, you'll understand very fast that cheap weapons are sometimes fun, but they're not going to be dependable. You're going to notice reliability issues across the way. The more you shoot it, the more it's going to happen. The people that are saying my gun is just as good as this, insert whatever expensive brand, they're putting 100 rounds through it a year at most. They're not really doing a whole lot with it. So yeah, a pretty much brand new barrel over the life of 10 years and less than 1,000 rounds through it is going to do really well. But you look at the guy that's putting 5,000 to 10,000 rounds per year through each of his weapons, he'll tell you, no, it's not. And there's truth behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's more expensive than buying a nice rifle or pistol? A hospital bill, because your stuff decided to fail on you and you became the victim in what you could have been, had a better outcome.
Or the cost of the funeral for your family.
That's true. Don't be a liability.
Today, we're also going to clear up some persistent nonsense that still floats around the gun world about the Weaver stance. And I hear this sometimes, especially in our ACHP classes and stuff. So I think it's something that, kind of near and dear. You probably heard a dozen different versions of what it is, where it came from, and why it looks the way it does. Most of you have heard it wrong. Let's start with the man himself, Jack Weaver. Jack Weaver did not invent some elaborate bladed push-pull, one elbow high, one elbow low, foot position-specific system. What he actually did was very simple. He put two hands on the pistol and brought it up to his eye target line. That's it. No grand theory. No isometric tension doctrine, no specific footwork, just a practical way of shooting that happened to be very effective in competition. Here's in Weaver's own words from a 2010 article he wrote. No thought was given to foot position, recoil control, or pushing with one hand and pulling with the other. I found out all kinds of things about myself that I didn't know until I read them in gun magazines. I had to go out and fire a few rounds to see if I really did push the right and pull with the left. Sure enough, that's his own words. So he really didn't give it a lot of thought. If you've ever seen the video interview with Weaver, you'll notice he doesn't demonstrate many of the things people wrongly attribute to him. He never once mentioned an injury forcing him into a particular arm position. That story is pure myth. Now let's talk about where the modern Weaver stance, as most people know it, actually came from. It wasn't Jack Weaver. It was Jeff Cooper and John Flann, who took what Weaver was doing, winning matches, and analyzed why it worked. They codified the isometric tension, strong hand pushing outward, support hand pulling inward. That push-pull creates a stable platform that helps control recoil and lets you get back on target faster. The bent support side elbow, that came from Cooper and Flann as part of what they called the modern technique. It did not come from Weaver, and it had nothing to do with any injury. Jeff Cooper's daughter, Lindy, said in an interview about the injury story that sometimes gets attached to her father. Here are her exact words. "He smashed his right elbow in a fall on the ice while holding my sister when she was a baby. He went through some very painful rehab and had a dent in his right arm where the elbow bone normally resides. This had nothing to do with the Weaver stance. The Weaver stance is what Jack Weaver used, and he kept winning, so Dad and John Flann analyzed why this was so and came to the conclusion that an isometric balance is achieved when the strong hand pushes outward and the weak hand pulls inward. And this push-pull effect enables a shooter to better control recoil and regain his sight picture more quickly. That is it. Clear as day, the injury story is a myth. The bladed body position that many people associate with the Weaver stance didn't come from Weaver or Cooper either. That was largely a law enforcement adaptation. Agencies taking the stance and blending it with the interview stance officers already used on the street. I've heard the same thing from multiple sources who were there. When I trained with Larry Mudgett years ago, he told me that Jeff Cooper and Jack Weaver eventually got tired of constantly correcting people about all of these misconceptions, and they just quit trying. I probably should too, but I'm not going to. There's one more important clarification. In a later video, Jeff Cooper explained his version of the stance. He said the shooter should be square to the target, and he preferred an unlocked strong side elbow. That's worth noting because a lot of what gets taught as Weaver today doesn't even match what Cooper actually taught. Here's the bottom line for the armed citizen. Stop getting wrapped around the axle about names and origin stories. The fundamentals that matter are a solid, consistent grip with proper isometric tension, bringing the gun to your eyes and target line, managing recoil so that you can make fast, accurate follow-up shots, a stable platform that works under stress. Call it Weaver, call it modern technique, call it what works for me. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you train it correctly, under realistic conditions, and that it actually works when your life is on the line. The gun world loves to turn practical tools into religions and then argue about the scriptures. Don't fall for it. Get the facts straight, train the fundamentals, and keep the nonsense out of your shooting. Let me address one other thing here. Bringing the gun to your eyes and the target line. I have seen an incredible amount of students that do what we call turtling, where they'll bring the gun up, but they bring their head down as well to the level with their sights or their dot. Stop doing that. Eyes, head, stays up, bring gun up to that gun target line. Watch Jeff Cooper and some of the other shooters from that era as they do that. It's all they're really doing is maintaining the grip, locking wrist, locking elbows, and just rotating at the shoulder.
Yep.
Jeff Cooper demonstrates it plenty of times. So,
yeah, I mean, you're with leaving your head in a natural position. Again, a lot of these people overcomplicate all these positions and how they shoot. You're just adding different points of failure to yourself, and it's not because you're doing it incorrectly, but it's because you're having to take time, maybe subconsciously, to remember where your head was at last, where your arms were at last, to make sure that you're getting back into your correct sight picture. So bringing my head down and trying to remember my neck is at 11 pounds pushing down right and the Mockingjay wind, you know, I'm not going to be able to shoot correctly. So keep it simple.
Stupid.
Well,
kiss.
Yep. Kiss.
Kiss.
I was going keys, but yeah.
Keys. All right. Hey, I appreciate everybody listening in. I hope you learned something today. Get out and enjoy the sun before the rain hits us on the weekend.
Yep.
But nonetheless, stay tuned with us. We'll be right back next week as well here at Shooter's Corner. on 11 o'clock. But nonetheless, you guys, everybody have a safe weekend and stay safe.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we're done for the day. All right, ladies and gentlemen, be safe. Go grill a burger.
You've been listening to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair,